Chapter 15 Centerpoint Station. Jason marched in Thrakken's direction, noting the silhouettes of more soldiers and possibly combat droids arriving from the distance beyond his cousin. Thrakken turned to the side, activated a door, and jumped through. It slid closed behind him, leaving nothing between Jason and the distant soldiers. The enemy opened fire. At this long range, even with as many enemies as were firing, Jason had no trouble deflecting incoming blaster bolts. He charged forward, sending most of the bolts back toward the enemy line, where front-row agents caught them with their crowd control shields, sometimes staggering from the strength of the blasts. Jason halted beside the door Thrakken had entered, pressing on toward his original goal and drawing more and more enemies toward him, and, in all probability, Ben, would not benefit the mission. Keeping them well away from the centers where sabotage was to take place would. He slapped the open button on the doorway. The door slid up. Jason grinned. Thrakken, certain that Jason would charge the oncoming Corsac agents and droids, hadn't even bothered to lock the door down. He found himself in a long hallway with a corresponding door at the far end, 40 meters away. That door was open, and Thrakken was just on the other side of it, looking back at Jason in some surprise. Jason stepped in, shut the door behind him, and shoved his lightsaber through the security board, all the way through, his blade emerging into the hallway he'd just left, and ruining the control board on that side as well. The oncoming enemy would have to run a bypass, a procedure that would take at least a couple of minutes. He looked at Thrakken again. His cousin seemed frozen by Jason's new tactic. Then Thrakken slapped the control board on his side of the doorway. The door slid down. Jason ran to it and slapped the open button, but the door remained in place. Jason grinned again. Thrakken did learn fast. He'd locked the door this time. Jason drove his lightsaber into the top of the door, shearing through the machinery that held the door in place. In a moment he'd be through, and he could use the force to lift the door out of the way. Dimly, he heard the ringing of boots on metal flooring beyond the door as Thrakken ran away.
"No, you're not," Ben told the ungainly assembly of droid components. "Anakin Solo's dead. He died when I was little."
The couplings where the droid's torso units met its arm attachments lifted noisily, a gesture that looked like a human shrug.
"Yes, I did die," it said, "and I became a ghost, and I was eventually drawn here to inhabit this mutated clone body, where I could help my ancestors, the Corellians."
"That's not a clone body," Ben protested. "It's a droid body."
The head swiveled so the droid could look down at itself.
"You're wrong, little cousin. Or you're deliberately trying to confuse me. I suspect the latter. You're here to sabotage this station, aren't you? To destroy it, so the Corellians can never enjoy freedom and independence."
"Boy, have they got you programmed."
Ben took a step forward, his lightsaber up in ready position. With his free hand, he gestured at the droid's head. If he could use the force to wrench it aside, he might be out of the droid's visual receptors, allowing him to jump in and attack without the droid seeing what was coming. Ben convulsed, and his vision blurred. He felt his entire body twitch and heard his lightsaber hit the floor and roll away, humming for a moment before its safety circuits switched the power off. He shook his head, and his vision began to clear. He was a meter off the floor, the air around him shimmering. His legs still twitched. The droid shrugged again.
"I'm sorry about that. It's an anti-Jedi defensive feature installed by my other cousin, Thrakken Sal Solo. It constantly monitors brainwave activity in an area. When centers of the brain that tend to become active when force powers are being utilized are detected, it turns on. Repulsors under the floor hold the Jedi safely above the ground, and electrical emissions, mostly painless, interfere with the Jedi's concentration. See, you've stopped using force powers,
and it has stopped shocking you. Efficient, isn't it?
Yeah, sure, whatever.
Ben reached down to draw his lightsaber back up to his hand, and jerked and jolted again as the defensive system electrocuted him a second time. After a few seconds of recovery, he said,
I guess it really works.
It does, doesn't it?
So, what were you going to do here?
Destroy the station, or at least disable whatever they're using to regain control of the repulsor weapon.
Ben looked dubiously at the droid.
I guess that's you.
Pounding began on the other side of the door. Ben winced. The guards outside would be calling for reinforcements. And even as badly as he'd damaged the door, it would still be only a few minutes before they had it open. He'd failed. Well, not quite yet.
They tell you they're going to use the station's weapon to stay independent, Ben said. And that would be fine, if that's what it was all about. But it's not. They're lying to you. The first big lie is that you're Anakin Solo, and that you're in a living body. You're not. You're a droid.
The droid sighed.
Yes, yes. Of course. It's true. They needed Anakin Solo's biometric data to control the repulsor weapon. So they probably got his fingerprints from old records. They would have reconstructed his brainwaves from whatever medical recordings they could find. Probably had to adjust them and mess with them until they could affect the station controls. And they installed them all in you so they'd have an Anakin Solo who would think and behave like a human, but do whatever they say.
I'm Anakin Solo. I'm a Jedi. I have control over the Force. See?
The droid extended an arm, and Ben's lightsaber flew from where it had rolled into its hand.
That's not the Force. I would have felt it if it was the Force.
Ben considered.
Since you can't have repulsor lift vents installed everywhere in the room, it was probably directed magnetics. You grabbed the metal handle of the lightsaber with magnetics.
He tried to keep an expression of dismay and sadness from his face. He didn't think he was very successful. It wasn't just that his mission was in jeopardy. There was something grotesque about this situation, about dealing with a droid that honestly thought it was his cousin. He'd have to find some way to destroy it.
There are security holocams operating in here, aren't there?
Ben asked.
Sure.
What do you look like in them?
I'm a very big human teenager, with somewhat overdeveloped bones to handle the strain caused by my great mass.
I'm going to open my pouch, Ben said. I'm going to pull out a little holocam. Please let me record you with it.
Go ahead.
Ben reached into his pouch and pulled out the holocam unit he'd used on Adumar. As soon as it cleared the lip of his pouch, though, the droid gestured, and the holocam snapped across the room into the droid's other hand.
Hey, Ben said, you promised.
No, I didn't.
The droid held the holocam up to its head, scrutinizing it under a succession of sensors.
I have to be sure it's not a blaster disguised as a holocam.
Well, it's not. You sound like someone who's afraid to get killed.
I am afraid to get killed.
Ben felt a surge of accomplishment, as though he'd managed to take a step toward eventual victory.
Anakin Solo wasn't. You're not him.
Quiet. I'm going to examine this thing's programming.
A slot in the droid's head, approximately where a human mouth would be in relation to its eyes, slid open. It stuffed the holocam into the slot, and it closed.
Hey, what do you think just happened?
I'm using my Force interface with computer equipment to analyze the programming.
That's not a Force power, you twit. And I mean, what just happened physically? You stuck my holocam into your own head.
You're crazy.
The droid's mouth slot opened,
and deposited the holocam back into its hand. The hand twitched, and suddenly the holocam flew back across the room toward Ben. Ben caught it.
So? I'm satisfied it's not a weapon, or programmed for any activity not part of a holocam's standard tasks.
Ben brought the holocam up, made sure that the droid's magnetics had not disrupted its operation, and began recording.
"Do me a favor," he said. "Wave, like you're on holiday. Do you have a message for your parents? Say something."
"That's a good idea." The droid waved awkwardly.
"Hey, Mom."
"Hey, Dad. I'm working hard but having a good time. I hope I'll get to see you soon." It paused.
"How's that?"
"Pretty good."
Ben's feelings of dismay intensified. The droid's words, as banal as those spoken by any average teenager separated from his parents, hit him hard. He stopped the recording and held out the holocam.
"Now look at what you just recorded."
The holocam flicked out of his fingers and into the droid's hand. Once again, the droid lifted it to the mouth slot and internalized it. Ben waited. There were more voices out in the hall, and the clanking of equipment being set down. The only other sounds were the hum of all the electronic equipment in the room and Ben's own breathing.
"It's a lie," the droid finally said.
"You looked at the holocam yourself. You said it had no weird programming.
I missed something."
"No, you didn't. You know you didn't. That holocam is dumber than a mouse droid. It couldn't hide anything from you."
The droid turned its upper body as it looked at Ben again. The boy could swear that its posture sagged. Tears sprang to Ben's eyes. He wiped them away.
"I'm so sorry," he said. "But it's true. You're a droid who's been programmed to think it's Anakin Solo. But if you were really Anakin, you'd help me destroy the station now, because the people who made you can use it as a weapon, and they could destroy whole stars with it."
"How would you have destroyed me?"
"I didn't come here to destroy you. I came here to destroy the station. I have a way to cause this control room to send a pulse through the station and wreck it."
"Killing everybody aboard?"
"No. It sends an emergency evacuation code first, and waits 10 minutes.
10 minutes? The droid sounded offended. "You think everyone on a station this large could get to escape pods in 10 minutes?
Guiltily, Ben shrugged.
"I didn't come up with the plan."
"Give me the data."
Ben reached into his pouch and grabbed the spike-topped data card. As an afterthought, he also grabbed the other data cards, those that would have initiated self-destruct or shutdown sequences from other control rooms in the station. He held them up and felt the droid's magnetics yank them out of his hand. A moment later, they went into the droid's mouth slot. "Analyzing," the droid said in its heartbroken tones. Then, "Oh, I know where that interface is. But I've been interpreting it as a candy dispenser."
"That's wrong," Ben said.
"I have to reinterpret myself in light of what it really is. These commands... No, I won't take life unnecessarily."
"Unnecessarily? Think about what's going to happen if you don't."
"It's true. Somebody is going to die. Them or me. Me or them."
"Except you wouldn't be dying," Ben said. "You're a droid. You're not really alive."
The droid leaned toward him, its posture suddenly menacing.
"If I do this, I'll end. Everything I am will just stop and never happen again."
"Tell me that's not dying."
"Go ahead. Tell me again."
Ben leaned away from the droid, ashamed.
I'm sorry.
The droid resumed its earlier posture. Analyzing programming, it said, its voice distracted, almost droid-like. Security bypasses, passcodes. Hey, there's some brilliant stuff here.
Our best spies have been working on it, Ben said absently.
The clanking and voices from the hall were becoming louder. He heard a whining noise, and the door lifted enough that a centimeter of corridor light shone through.
I'm going places I didn't know about, seeing through security holocams I couldn't access before.
The droid looked up and waved toward the ceiling.
Look, there I am.
Its voice became dreamy.
There are places, intersections into the old systems. So old, beautiful engineering. I can almost get in.
It sighed, a sound of exasperation.
They won't let me in.
Time's kind of running out, Ben said.
What are you going to do, Anakin?
I'm not really Anakin, am I?
You're an Anakin.
Not Anakin Solo.
Anakin Sal Solo.
The droid laughed, but it was a humorless noise.
Thrakken's offspring. That's what I am.
Ben suddenly found himself falling. He landed in a crouch on the floor. He looked cautiously up at the droid.
I'm not going to destroy this station, the droid said. If you could feel it the way I do, feel its life. And there's so much knowledge here. But I'll keep my father and his friends from using it. I guess that means I have to die.
I'm sorry, Ben said, and he truly was.
He couldn't quite accept the droid as his cousin, but he abruptly realized he was thinking of it as a him, a living thing. A noble one.
There it is, right at the human builder interface, the droid said. The code representing the station's imprinting on Anakin Solo. I'm installing a procedure to scramble what the station thinks Anakin Solo is, and another one to purge my memory. In me, in all my backups. Without those files, I doubt they'll ever be able to deconstruct what I've done.
The door suddenly shot upward a meter. Without looking, the droid gestured toward it. It slammed shut again, so hard that the frame buckled. Ben heard cries of alarm and outrage from outside.
There's my own code. My programming, the droid continued. Checks and locks in place. Let's get rid of that one.
It sighed, a sound of tremendous relief.
There we go. No more fear of death. Take 3 steps to your right.
It took Ben a moment to realize the droid was addressing him. He obeyed. The lightsaber flew from the droid's hand to him. He caught it out of the air.
Straight down from where you are, the droid said, there's an unguarded chamber. It leads to a corridor that parallels the one outside. You should leave now.
Thank you, Ben said. He felt numb.
He activated his lightsaber and pressed the blade tip into the floor. Smoke curled up as he began dragging the blade around in a slow circle.
I think I'll activate that evacuation alarm anyway, the droid said. You know why?
Why?
'Cause it'll be funny to watch all the people run around.
The droid laughed again, and this time there was real mirth in it.
Won't that be a good way to die? No pain? And watching people do silly things like in a holocomedy?
That's a good way, all right.
Ben's circle was almost done. His lightsaber blade hissed louder as his tears fell on it, and little puffs of steam rose to join the smoke. Jason caught up to Thraken in a corridor intersection. Against the long wall, flush with the floor, were two shiny silver disks more than a meter in diameter. Above them, transparent tubes emerged from the ceiling a short distance, no more than 20 centimeters. The tubes looked like some sort of escape access, but no ladders led up to them. Thraken was in the act of reaching toward a control panel on the wall when Jason lashed out through the force, hammering Thraken into the wall. The older man bounced off, rolling painfully to his knees atop one of the silver disks. And then Jason reached him, holding the glowing tip of his lightsaber just under Thraken's chin. Jason saw the tips of Thraken's beard hairs blacken from the heat. His cousin, panting and almost stunned, said,
"I guess you win.
I guess I..."
"Time to die, Solo!"
The voice was Thraken's, but it came from behind. Reflexively, Jason turned and began to bring his lightsaber up in a defensive posture. There was a blaster retort from behind him. The shot hit his lightsaber hilt and catapulted the weapon out of his hand, sending it down the corridor. He spun again. Thraken, blaster in hand, finished rising and fired into Jason's chest. Jason caught the shot, barehanded, dissipating its energy before it reached his palm. He smiled and opened his hand, showing Thraken his undamaged palm. Thraken fired again. Jason twitched his hand over to the left, caught the second shot. Then he crooked his finger with his left hand. The blaster flew from Thraken's grip into that hand. Jason glanced back to where his lightsaber lay and gestured for it. It flew the 4 meters between them and dropped into his right hand. He activated it again and positioned its tip in front of Thraken's neck.
"Stang,"
Thraken said. His expression suggested he was genuinely impressed.
"I heard rumors that Darth Vader could do that. Can all Jedi do that?"
"No." "What did you do? A recording?"
"Yes, a little sound recorder. It was triggered by me saying, 'I guess you win.'" "Time to die, Solo!"
came the cry from behind Jason. Jason snorted, amused despite the urgency of his mission. "I see."
"Except you really lose. In a minute, all the forces I've brought to bear will be here. They'll continue to follow you, to wear you down, until one of them drops you, and your plan to destroy this station will fail. In that sense, it already has failed."
A distant wail filled the air, a keening noise seemingly emanating from all directions at once, echoing and overlapping as though a city-sized droid were suddenly grieving for a slain offspring. Thraken paled. Jason grinned.
"That's the evacuation alarm. It means we have 10 minutes to get off this station before it destroys itself, which means that my apprentice, who is fortunate enough not to share any blood with you, has succeeded in setting up the station's destruction."
He leaned closer, the proximity of his lightsaber blade causing Thraken to lean away.
"I can still share in his success a little bit. I could kill you. Remove your stain from the galaxy."
Thraken shook his head.
"Jedi don't kill prisoners who have surrendered."
"You haven't surrendered."
"I surrender."
Thraken raised his hands.
"There."
A younger Jason might have been offended by the older man's casual, even contemptuous manipulations. This Jason merely met manipulation with manipulation.
"Perhaps Jedi don't, but I might. You've done nothing but do damage to Corellia, to the New Republic, and to my family since I was a child. Wouldn't the universe be a better place without you in it?"
"Very funny," Thraken said.
Jason could feel just the tiniest trace of increased distress in the man's emotions. Distress and... no. He was feeling something else. From somewhere else. Pain. Death. From the future. From a future. One of any number of possible futures. Jason peered into it, letting the events of that potential timeline wash over him, but kept one eye on his cousin, alert through just his sight for any treachery. Events flashed past him too fast to absorb all their meaning. Starfighters launched lasers and missiles, raining death on the innocent. Why not the guilty? He could see no guilty. Pilot versus pilot, soldier versus soldier, no one was guilty. Neither side was more evil, more dark. War spread out from Corellia like ripples from a rock hitting the surface of a pond. And the rock was an image of Jason and Thraken. Jason saw clouds of expanding gas where the Brave had flown, corpse-littered fields where the Brave had fought, near unrecognizable ruins that had once been huge space vessels but were now crushed like beverage containers on the rocky surfaces of moons. And pain. Pain racking the force like nothing had since the Yuuzhan Vong War. Pain twisting his kin. Shrieks of loss filled his ears. He focused on the rock in the pond, the image of himself and Thraken, and saw all these events unfolding from the point, the here and now, when he failed to kill Thraken. Shaken, he yanked himself back from the vision and stood there, breathing heavily.
"What is it, boy?"
Thraken asked, his tone almost kindly.
"You've gone pale."
Jason blinked at him. He felt as though he were hung on a hook. His mind told him that he couldn't do what his gut said he must. He couldn't cut down an enemy who had surrendered. "Trust the Force," Luke had told him so often. "Trust your feelings in the Force." He couldn't not cut down this enemy, even if the man had surrendered. Jason slowed his breathing, his heartbeat. He got his voice under control.
"I apologize," he said. "I actually do have to kill you now." "You're insane. I've surrendered."
"That's not enough. You ruin the future, Thraken." No, that wasn't quite right. But the future was ruined if he lived. "For the greater good, our Jedi traditions notwithstanding, I have to kill you."
"But my droids are here."
A blaster opened up from behind Jason. He turned to intercept the bolt, and partway into his maneuver, cursed himself for being tricked twice. No one stood in the hallway. The sound of blaster fire emerged from a small circular device adhering to the ceiling near a glow rod light fixture. Jason continued his maneuver into a full spin. His lightsaber, ending its 360-degree sweep, would cut Thraken in half. Instead, it hit a gleaming metal column. Jason glanced up. The column was rising out of the floor, propelling the metal disc Thraken stood on up to the ceiling. The disc hit the edges of the transparent tube, and there was a tremendous thoom noise. Thraken's feet launched up from the disc and disappeared from sight. Jason stepped onto the second disc and hit all four buttons on the control panel. The disc he stood on raised him rapidly into position, to the bottom of the second tube, and an instant later, a second ear-hammering thoom catapulted him upward. Propelled by an energy he couldn't yet define, repulsors, pneumatic air currents, tractor beams, he flew up through his tube, flashing past corridors, sometimes seeing open channels out to space, sometimes seeing lit passageways through which people were running. The shaft the two tubes occupied was sometimes tight-packed with machinery or engineering supports, sometimes open. The first time it opened, Jason looked up and could see Thraken, 100 meters or more above him in his own tube. Thrakken's tube twisted, a right-angled turn, and suddenly he was headed away. The turn would have pulped a human under ordinary circumstances. Gravitics, Jason told himself. Only gravity manipulation could have allowed Thrakken to survive. Jason reached the same altitude. His tube turned the opposite direction. He felt his stomach lurch, and suddenly he was hurtling away from his enemy, away from the man he desperately needed to kill. He howled, a noise of anger and distress he could barely hear over the wind noise whipping along the tube's interior. Then he deactivated his lightsaber, clipped it to his belt, and tucked Thrakken's blaster into a pouch. It was time to be calm. Time to get off this station. Time to find out Ben's status. Thrakken was right. Jason had failed. Not in his intended mission, but in his greater responsibility.